I'm Richard Ady. Welcome back to the Best of Sunday Profile on RN Summer. Today, the world-leading researcher and part-time choreographer who couldn't legally work when she arrived in Australia. Manoti Apte looks at the pancreas. It's an organ you probably don't think much about, but it makes the enzymes that are vital for digestion, and it also makes insulin, the hormone that controls blood sugar levels. So it's a big deal if the pancreas goes wrong, and it can. Alcohol abuse can cause inflammation called pancreatitis, and pancreatic cancer is the fifth most deadly form of the disease. Manoti Apte's research targets both of these problems, and it really is world class. It's probably the main reason she's the New South Wales Woman of the Year, but as you'll hear, it isn't the only reason. Let's begin with the research.
Start with the basics. The pancreas is an organ that's very important for living. In essence, it's the organ that actually makes your digestive enzymes that help you digest your food, without which, of course, nothing can get processed. And the other part of the organ makes insulin, which actually then controls your blood sugar levels. Of course, it's a bit more complex than that, but these are the two major functions of the gland. Anything that goes wrong with the gland can then affect these major functions, which then affects your life. So we are looking at ways by which alcohol, which is one of the very common abused, factors, can damage the pancreas, because not all alcoholics get damage to the pancreas.
And I think most people wouldn't realise that it could. They would think if you drink a lot of alcohol, you can certainly damage your liver and there are other health problems as well. Most people wouldn't think of the pancreas.
Exactly right. I mean, that's the problem, I guess, in a way with the pancreas in general. It's like an orphan organ because not many people know about it. Unless you get diabetes, then some people might know about it. But alcoholic pancreatitis is also quite common. And to look after the patients currently in a year with chronic pancreatitis, which is the disease that alcohol can cause, it costs the health system about $30 million a year.
Okay.
So that's not an insignificant amount. And especially when you think that these patients can live for 10, 15, 20 years, it adds up to a lot of money. So we need to find ways to prevent or inhibit this disease.
So that's what you're working on. And also there's pancreatic cancer as well.
Yes, pancreatic cancer is, again, as many people might know, a lethal disease. It's got the worst prognosis of most cancers. It's the fourth leading cause of cancer-related death at the moment.
Is it because it is inherently nasty, or is it because it's very hard to detect and that it doesn't present in an obvious way, so by the time you get the diagnosis, it's quite late?
It's probably a bit of both. It is an aggressive disease and it is hard to diagnose. But although having said that, with the new imaging technologies, diagnosis is improving. Yet this cancer does seem to have spread by the time it's diagnosed. So it is an aggressive disease. And we haven't succeeded in actually preventing or curing this cancer. Perhaps mostly, we think, is because we haven't had enough research dollars put into pancreatic cancer. So whereas other cancers such as breast and prostate and colon are improving in outcome, and that's perhaps because they've had 20, 25 years of good research funding, pancreatic cancer hasn't yet had the attention.
You said before, the organ's an orphan, and it's an orphan when it comes to cancer too, despite it being one of the biggest cancer killers in the country.
Exactly. And by 2020, it'll become the second leading cause of cancer-related death, and that's probably not because you'll get more patients. You probably will get a few more, but probably the more important reason is because the outcomes of the other cancers are getting better because we've had so much research behind them. And so we hope that, you know, with increased funding, we can improve this.
All right. Now, I want to be clear on the work you've done here, because this is really important. This research, the insights that you've gained, people talk about them all around the world. So take me through it slowly.
Okay. So when I was doing my PhD way back now in 1998, towards the end of my PhD, I actually was able to isolate a type of cell in the pancreas that had never been isolated before. This is a cell that makes the scar tissue of the pancreas. And both in alcoholic pancreatitis and pancreatic cancer, there is a lot of scar tissue. Now, these types of cells had been actually isolated from the liver almost 150 years ago. So that's how far behind we were in terms of the pancreas.
Stellate cells?
Stellate cells. These are called pancreatic stellate cells or star-like cells. And when we were able to isolate them, then the field exploded because up until then, we had no way of knowing how the scar tissue was being formed. And unless you can isolate and culture these cells in the lab, you can't really look into their function.
So you're looking at, I suppose, is the relationship the right word between cancerous cells and these stellate cells?
Yeah, it's quite the right word. It's also called an interaction or a crosstalk. So all cancer cells, at least in the pancreas, we have a lot of scar tissue, as I mentioned before. And the scar tissue is formed of these stellate cells plus other cells. There are cells that line the blood vessels, there are neural elements, there are immune cells. Mm-hmm. And all these cells in a tissue talk to each other. And the cancer cells are so cunning, they can recruit these normal cells to their own benefit.
They're like the charismatic nasty cells.
Very much so. And that's something that we hadn't been actually paying any attention to for at least about 5 to 7 years ago. Because most of the efforts on trying to cure cancer was focused on targeting the cancer cells.
Yes.
But now we think it's not enough to do that, because we're not improving the outcome. We need to target the stellate cells as well.
When you're a PhD, I love this, that you make this discovery when you're a PhD student. That's very unusual. But when you did you realise how important it was?
I realised how important it was when I first presented it to an international conference called Digestive Disease Week, which is the American Gastroenterological Association. They have an annual meeting. And I stood up there and described these cells. And there were so many people in the audience who came up to me after that and they said, oh, we've been looking at these cells forever and a day, never realised that these are the things that are going to be important for fibrosis, which is scarring.
Scarring, yes. Yeah. That was when the penny dropped.
Yeah, that's when we thought, wow, this is something going to be really big. But you'd be interested to know that unbeknownst to us, there was another group in Germany working in the same field.
Oh, yeah.
And we beat them to press by 1 month.
That's a good feeling,
so,
I imagine.
Certainly for Australian medical research, it was a big coup.
Okay, so you were mobbed by the pancreatologists?
Yes,
is that the right word?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not a word I say very often. And you're just a PhD student. How did you get interested in this field?
I guess I fell into research. I'm a medical doctor from India, graduated in medicine from India, accompanied my husband to Australia as a trailing spouse because he had a scholarship to do a PhD in engineering at University of Newcastle. Because of all the various visa restrictions and, you know, being a dependent spouse, I thought I'd at least volunteer in the hospital just to work, just to do something.
So hang on, you weren't...
No.
You couldn't work as a doctor?
No, I had to do an exam if I wanted to work as a doctor.
Right.
But before that, I thought, well, let me just volunteer at the pathology department. It was something that I thought I might be interested in. The professor there had just received a small grant to work on alcoholic liver disease. And he said to me, would you be interested in research? And I must admit, at that time, I didn't think I would be interested. I didn't really know what research really meant, or medical research anyway. So I thought, well, I'll give it a go. And I started working for him and then was able to get my own Commonwealth scholarship to do a Master of Medical Science. That's how I fell into research.
Right.
And so once I did my work on alcoholic liver disease, we moved to Sydney. And again, I became a dependent spouse. By then I'd had my son. No family support. So basically stayed home for 2 years. And then decided to go and look for a job. Again, I had to get my own visa. You know, you can't work if you're a dependent spouse. So I was lucky enough to come across a group of people who were working on alcohol and the pancreas. And they needed my skills from my master's for this research. And so that's how I was employed by them. And then I got my own working visa.
So it was not being able to work that set you down this path?
Yes. Just out of interest for the listeners, I got married in an arranged marriage.
Uh-huh.
Not forced, arranged as in, you know, our families got us to meet and we decided, okay, we'll it's okay. We didn't have to go out for long or anything. You just meet, and within the next few days, you decide whether you want to get married, which you did. And I had said to my mom before then that I did not want to go abroad. I wanted to stay in India and do ophthalmology, because that's what my passion was.
Mm-hmm.
My mom said, oh, no, this boy is not going to go abroad. He's got family here. He's going to stay here. But then as it happened, soon after we got married, my husband got a scholarship to come to Newcastle.
Right.
And so that's how I arrived.
Did that prompt a bit of a discussion between you and your mum?
Not so much me and my mum, me and my in-laws.
Ah.
It's difficult. I mean, at the time, in an arranged marriage, when you don't know the family that well, you know your you think you know your husband, you know your family only after you've met them for a month or two, then you're trying to convince them that you want this sort of career. My in-laws obviously were very excited when my husband got his scholarship, and they were willing to let him go on because now he was married and settled, you know, they were able to let him go, so to speak, because we were very young. We were only, I was 22, he was 25, so, you know, we arrived quite young in this country. But we've always been felt very welcome here, never had any problems.
On Sunday Profile, I'm Richard Adey, and Professor Manoti Apte is my guest. Manoti's the 2015 New South Wales Woman of the Year, primarily for her contributions to medical research, but also to tertiary education, the Indian community. I'll ask her about that shortly. The team she leads at the Ingham Institute, which is in southwestern Sydney, is at the cutting edge of pancreatic research, especially in cancer. Before we talk, Manoti, about the inroads you're making into a possible treatment, tell me about your work in the community, because I understand that you are quite the dancer and choreographer.
Oh, I dabble. It's a hobby of mine. It's a hobby of mine. I mean, I must admit, I did not do any dancing in India because I was too busy with medicine and other studies. Although I did play for our state in badminton, so I did do sport.
So you obviously coordinated.
Yeah, I think so. And then when I got here, I was looking for a source of fun, I guess, and exercise, which would get me out of the house and let me do something that I wanted just for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got into dancing. My teacher is a Kathak teacher. So Kathak is a North Indian classical style of dancing.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I got into dancing. It was only one day a week, Saturdays, and it was for fun. But then the Marathi community that I belong to, it's grown quite a bit since the small community when we first arrived in Sydney in 87, always has cultural programs. And they were looking to perform cultural or classical Indian dancing. And so that's how I got into choreographing for all people who were interested in performing. And one of the biggest things I've done, I guess, for the community is a large musical with about 120 participants that we...
And you choreographed all that?
We choreographed the whole thing.
Now, when I think a lot of people hear Indian dancing, they're going to think Bollywood.
Yeah,
this is not that, is it?
This is not Bollywood. This is absolutely not Bollywood. I would like to emphasize that very much. Bollywood dancing has a place of its own.
Yes.
It's very popular, obviously.
Lots of smiling and very attractive young
people.
And
lots of hip shaking,
yes,
which most classical dancing does not involve. But all the very, very good Bollywood dancers have classical training, whether it be a North Indian style of classical dance or a South Indian style.
The one you do, Kathak?
Kathak, yes.
Kathak. It tells big, big stories, doesn't it?
Yes. Kathak actually means teller of tales or teller of stories, a person who tells stories through music and dance. That's actually what Kathak means. And it's derived from the actual Persian influence or the Muslim influence that India had, especially the northern parts of India.
Mm-hmm.
It started out as dancing for the kings in their courts, and then, of course, had a bit more widely socially acceptable phenomenon occurred after that. But it's a very graceful type of dance. I love it.
I'm going to find out more about it after talking. How long does it take to tell one of these big stories?
Well, like I said, that musical was sort of based on Kathak dancing, and that went for 2.5 hours or so. But that's just the story, the flow of the story. But you can do a small piece for within 5 or 6 minutes. And often it may not even have words, it may just be music. And the dancer conveys the emotions through her actions or her gestures.
And you were saying, when you first started talking to me about this, that you didn't do any of this when you were growing up.
Not in India. I loved it. I always loved dancing. My mom tells the story of how at about my father was in the army and one of the parties that they had, there was probably only three, and I was the only little one dancing on the floor for consistently for about 3 hours. So I probably always loved dancing.
So your focus when you were young, it was what, study?
Well, at school I was into everything. I was into elocution, drama. I was the prefect of my sports house.
A girly school. SWAT from the sound of things.
Probably.
Yes.
Probably.
An overachiever. The kind of daughter that every parent wants to have. But so what were you going to do when you grew up?
I always knew I was going to be a doctor from 8 years of age. Because my grandmother's sister actually was an obstetrician gynecologist all those years ago. Yeah. She was already a specialist and she inspired me a lot. So I was always going to do medicine. Specializing in ophthalmology came a little bit later on. As I was doing medicine, I decided I'd like to do ophthalmology. Uh-huh. It involves a lot of very minute work. And I
fine
think,
motor
very
control
fine
as well.
Motor control. And I thought I'd be good at that. But as it turned out, it wasn't to be.
And you've already mentioned your great aunt, but your family's your mother is academic as well.
Yeah,
isn't
my
she?
my mum's was a professor of chemistry. My aunt, my mum's sister, is a professor of physics. My own grandmother, my dad's mum, actually founded a girls' school and then was the principal of the school for many years. My other great aunt was a principal for another girls' school, so I was surrounded. That was my understanding, that all women achieved.
That's a great thing to have.
Yeah, it was wonderful growing up in that family.
When you were given the award a few weeks ago now, when you spoke, you mentioned the difficulties facing women who juggle family and research. It's demanding, isn't it?
It's very demanding. I don't think people quite get it. In terms of the type of work that research involves, especially academics. So people probably think university teachers, lecturers, professors go to work, teach a few students, maybe do research on the side as a hobby and take 3 months off every time the university students have holidays.
It sounds fantastic when you say it that way.
Which is absolutely so far from the truth that it's eye-wateringly different from the truth. And while we love what we do, as researchers, mm-hmm. It is not one of those jobs that you get paid overtime for or penalty rates for or anything. You spend virtually 60, 70 hours a week often preparing for grant funding, trying to apply and succeed at grant funding, which another thing is that the success rate is so low now that one of the things I said in my speech was the danger of losing are very well-trained young researchers.
Yeah. So how did you square the circle then with, you know, being a mum?
Like I said, I mean, I stayed home for 2 years. I decided that I wasn't going to be able to put my baby in daycare for too long at that time. And then a lot of support from my husband, obviously. I mean, long daycare centres. My son went to daycare centre from 7 in the morning to 6 in the evenings most days. Mm. My husband was, of course, very supportive. Being an academic himself, he understood the pressures of that kind of job. So had fantastic family support. My sister and brother-in-law are in Sydney, so they were able to help later on. This was after my son was in primary school. So, you know, it was just a lot of support.
Okay, let's talk about the research mm-hmm. and the goals and any treatment possibilities.
Right.
Let's talk about the alcohol one first. What are the prospects?
For treatment?
Mm.
Well, we think we are on a path that might give us some improvement in therapy. The reason, as I said, is that alcoholic pancreatitis is characterized by a lot of scarring and no attention was paid to the scar tissue for this long. We have now worked out the biology of the pancreatic stellate cells to an extent where we think that we can target certain pathways in those cells to keep them from becoming activated and causing all that scar tissue.
Right.
In alcoholics, this is a problem, and they get activated very quickly. If we can interrupt some of those pathways by treatment, by drugs that are targeting only those cells, you can imagine scar tissue would actually squeeze out the life out of all the other normal tissue. If you can prevent the scarring from happening, we can actually prevent the pancreas from being damaged to such an extent that the people then get chronic pain, maldigestion, diabetes, which are all the complications of, you know, advanced chronic pancreatitis.
So you think you can come up with a pharmaceutical approach?
Yes.
But it's probably still a long way off.
It is. I mean, as with most research, you know, even when people talk about antibiotics that are good for you now, have taken 15, 20, 25 years of research to get to that point. So you have to start somewhere. And we think we're at a point where we can actually certainly prove that in an animal model.
All right. Yeah. So where are we with the cancer?
So with pancreatic cancer, like I said before, there's a lot of crosstalk between the cancer cells and the surrounding cells. The stellate cells are not malignant. They're not cancerous in themselves, but they're talking to the cancer cells and helping them along. We are actually targeting one specific pathway, which we think is very specific to the crosstalk between stellate cells and cancer cells, and stellate cells and the cells lining your blood vessels, which actually helps the cancer spread.
Mm.
You know, the more blood vessels you have, move through the circulation. And in our animal models, we've got some very, very encouraging results where we've been able to almost completely stop the spread of cancer using an approach to target that pathway.
How far away from human trials are you, do you think?
Realistically, I would say about 5 to 7 years at least. The reason being that while we've proved this in one model, to be robust scientifically, you have to use many different models to make sure that you're getting the same results. But the beauty of what we are doing is that what we are using to target the pathways are already in clinical use in other diseases.
Right. So this isn't inventing a new drug.
No, it's not inventing a new drug. It's inventing a new
use for it
and a new target for it so that we could possibly take it to clinic more quickly than trying to invent a new drug to prove it's safe in humans.
That's
and
it.
All that.
You already know that, that it's safe.
The safety and efficacy is proven.
It must be a really good feeling to have a job like yours, to know that actually what you're doing is going to make a difference.
That's what makes me get up and go to work every day, you know, without that kind of inspiration or hope. And the thing is, especially when you meet patients with pancreatic cancer and you see their resilience and their will to fight, and you know that current treatments have limitations, you really want to do something that will help them. And they themselves are an inspiration. I mean, I've met a few patients who are amazing. What they have to go through with chemotherapy, radiation, it's not pleasant. But yet their whole focus is on supporting research in kind, in whatever way they can, to make it better for the next person who might get the disease. So that's an inspiration in itself.
I can understand that it would be. I'm sure I'm not alone in wishing you well with your research. Congratulations again. And
thank you very much.
Thanks for
Richard.
Being my guest.
Thank you for having me.
Manoti Apte is Professor of Medicine at the University of New South Wales and Director of the Pancreatic Research Group at the Ingham Institute in Liverpool, southwest Sydney. And quite the choreographer too. Next week, we'll introduce you to Sue Ismail and her amazing migrant story. That's on the Best of Sunday Profile on RN. If you want to listen again or find out more, head to our website. Put Sunday Profile into your search engine of choice. The program is produced by Belinda Sommer. I'm Richard Adie.